The following podcast will probably cause offense. If you are easily offended, proceed with caution.
The following podcast is presented by the Super Network and Pop4D. It's the 2B Tuesdays podcast, a weekly show where your hosts go on the free streaming service Tubi at tubitv.com and find a film to do a commentary slash watch along for. We are the number one Tubi related podcast hosted by two Australians and one Canadian. And they are Super Marcy.
What is this?
The terrible Australian Be Jermaine.
I got my bottle of red wine and my vacuum cleaner and I'm ready to go.
And Professor Batch.
That's a Christmas Carol film.
This podcast contains coarse language.
This movie looks like it was
This escalated quickly.
Adult themes.
You gotta press some buttons if you really wanna get that phone going.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. If you want to watch the film along with listening to the podcast, you can find it streaming or perhaps on physical media and just start the film when we say go. And then pause anytime Tubi gives an ad and then press play once it's over to continue. For more information, please check supermarcy.com and you can show your support at patreon.com/thesupernetwork and get exclusive video versions of this show weekly. Now onto your feature presentation. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 2B Tuesdays podcast, your podcast where your hosts go on the free streaming service Tubi and watch random movies. I am your host, Super Marcy, and this is episode 66. And what makes episode 66 very special? Well, you'll find out very soon. We're continuing Trauma Month. Trauma! This is the final episode for Trauma Month, and we have a very incredible episode for everybody. But before we get to it, I'll introduce the other Australian and the Canadian portion of this podcast. Please welcome my co-host. He is the one who is terrible, Bede Jermaine. Hello, Bede. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
Very, very good. Very good. Doing well. Loving loving life right now, I've got to say.
Yeah. I got to say I'm the same as well, because we are at the end of Trauma Month, and we decided to go out with a bang for this one, which we will reveal shortly.
Yes.
But I'm very excited for this episode, Marcy.
Absolutely. Just, whoa. And please welcome. He is back. He has not been strangely kidnapped by Craven. This week, please welcome our beautiful Canadian brother, Professor Batch.
Good day. Now, I know Craven told me that I was supposed to be his bodyguard, but what he doesn't realize is that I'm letting Louise Lasser know his whereabouts all time. So.
Watsy, you want to do that?
Because I don't like you, Craven.
Damn it, Craven.
Damn it, Craven. But I made sure I was back this week, because this is a huge show. We're blowing up Trauma Month with a bang. Tell us why, guys.
Yes. So, everybody, this is the big one. This is the biggest episode ever of the 2B Tuesdays podcast, where we actually did not use 2B to watch the film, but you'll understand why. And the
it's
film
the first
is
time.
On...
It's not the first time we never used 2B.
Well, that is true. However, the film is on 2B as of this recording.
We should also state... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, you go.
I was going to say, not only the reason why this is a big episode is because we have a very, very special guest. Mm-hmm. And this person picked the movie themselves for this episode by their choice. Yeah. And tell us, Marcy, who that person is and what the film they picked.
Yeah. So we have arguably the biggest guest we have ever had on the 2B Tuesdays podcast. I cannot contain my excitement anymore. We will be joined by the one and only Lloyd Kaufman, the man behind Trauma, the face of Trauma, the man responsible for all these amazing films. Yes, Lloyd Kaufman is joining us on the show as our special guest, and he picked the absolute classic Romeo and Juliet.
Woo!
I mean, what planet are we on, guys? We are about to watch Romeo and Juliet with the Lloyd Kaufman. Like, this is... Oh, how exciting. I
think our excitement levels are at least 300%, Marcy. I think we're all three of us are very excited for this.
Now, we should say, full disclosure, this is not a normal episode of 2B Tuesday because we were very gracious to work around Lloyd's schedule. We recorded this episode in two different recordings. So if it's a little different, then that's why. But still, it is awesome.
Yes. So just keep that in mind. It shouldn't be too difficult to kind of keep up with watching along with the film, but I'm sure you can just kind of rewind or fast forward to kind of keep in sync. But even without watching it, I'm sure us watching Romeo and Juliet with Lloyd Kaufman is going to be fantastic. And if you are very sensitive to any kind of topics, this might not be the episode for you. If you know anything about Lloyd Kaufman, Lloyd is a man who does not hold back when he talks, and he is
no filter.
He has no filter. He's very funny. He's just wonderful. So if you kind of maybe a bit unsure, I mean, that's your choice to skip it. Now, we do not want to offend anybody, but maybe if you're offended, that's
good. But I'm an asshole.
Yeah. Craven's probably offended, but yeah. Without further ado, let's welcome the man to the show. And we are here with the legendary, the one and only Lloyd Kaufman. Uncle Lloyd, thank you for joining us today. Woo!
We're not worthy.
Well, thank you. I am not worthy. Thank you very much. This is indeed a to-be evening.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
It's a Shakespeare reference because the Tempest is... our latest Shakespearean adaptation, and it is being called the best adaptation of The Tempest that has been created in the entire history of Shakespeare. But we're going to talk about Romeo and Juliet, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Indeed.
It's Troma Month on the 2B Tuesday podcast. We're doing all Troma films this month. So the first one we did was The Toxic Avenger, and we're going to wrap. We're wrapping it up with Romeo and Juliet.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, all the love to Troma, and people out there, please check out Troma now. It is the Troma streaming service. It is dirt cheap. You get a 1 month free trial. There is so much amazing content on there. I will be spending a lot of time on Troma now. So please throw your support behind Troma and subscribe.
We, my wife and I watch it. We actually love it. It's got about 1,000 movies. It's got behind the scenes, full length documentaries, Poultry Guys, Toxic, of course, Citizen Toxic. It's got music videos. Troma now has my exclusive Make You Want. It's really good.
Yes.
Our own library of about 1,000 different movies, and plus every month. The James Gunns and Barkers and Eli Roths, Samuel Jacksons of the future.
There's so much amazing content on Troma now, and I am very keen to look watch all the documentaries because I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're great, and you can get the app. The app is now app is free on the App Store.
Yes, it is. It's on my phone.
It's definitely a lot of fun, and also. Movies that come from the heart, you know, movies made by real independent thinkers and people in the tradition of other great Troma directors like Trey Parker and Matt Stumpf and James Gunn.
I'm not used to this microphone. James, whatever happened to James Gunn?
That beats me. I kind of lost touch, but... but thanks. Well, I guess... Romeo and Juliet is... I spent 5 years trying to figure out how to do Romeo and Juliet. Had all different writers. First, I did it in Shakespearean iambic pentameter. Then we got high school kids. John G. Avildsen, by the way, with whom I worked on Rocky and Cry Uncle and Saturday Night Fever and Slow Dancing, the big. He told me get high school kids and have them talk in their language and rewrite Romeo and Juliet. And I did that, and that ended up being pretty stupid because the American school system sucks. And then anyway, 5 years later, James Gunn became my assistant, and I saw that he had an MA from Columbia University, and he had written a very good novel, and he was a performance artist who, on his resume, it said he vomited it on stage. So he was the ultimate, the perfect trauma employee. And I gave him $100 and maybe 125. And he came back with a very good draft. He solved the balcony speech. He solved, the biggest problem with James's, his first draft, he had 7 urination scenes. The trauma, we don't permit more than 5 urination scenes. Oh. But other than that, it was a brilliant first draft. We worked on the next draft for a couple of months, and basically James was my co-director on the movie, and he's in the film too. He's very funny in the movie.
His brother's all right as well.
Sean Gunn. Sean Penn is busy in the Ukraine. But Sean Gunn, who's much nicer than Sean Penn, he did a terrific job in Romeo and Juliet. And also Willie Wisely, who was one of James Gunn's high school friends, scored the film. And you'll be very happy to know that Romeo and Juliet soundtrack is out, a complete annotated soundtrack with not just Willie Wisely's movie for the score, but also Lemmy and the Pope on a Rope and there was a big guy who killed himself. I'm getting senile.
That's all right, Lloyd.
Who's the guy? Sublime. Song.
Yes.
It's James Gunn's band from high school, the Icons. James said he made more money from the music that he put in Romeo and Juliet than from the screenplay, but good for him.
Nice. Well, should we get on with it and watch some of this movie?
Let's play the movie and have a chat.
I'll count us down from 5, and all of our listeners out there, if you're watching the film on Tubi or Trova now, when I say go, that's when you play the movie. So in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Let's have a look at Romeo and Juliet.
This is a beautiful, beautiful Troma logo, 50 years, I don't remember who wrote the music, but I do remember that Theo, our special effects matte artist, created the cityscape with the wonderful. Look at this! A squirrel.
It's the squirrel.
That poor squirrel.
That's an animatronic squirrel. It's not real.
I was going to say, Lloyd, what I love about the opening, you know, logo of Troma. I was just saying, like, that opening logo needs to be up there with, like, the legendary 20th Century Fox or Columbia Pictures or Warner Brothers logos. It's that iconic.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much and appreciate it. And Lemmy, who is... Lemmy has more words on screen. He has more dialogue than anybody, and yet you can't understand one word. So he did about 8 movies. At some point, we gave him subtitles, fortunately, we didn't give him subtitles, so you can't quite understand everything. Also, he rewrote some of James Gunn's scripts.
Oh.
And to this day, James Gunn is not a fan of Lemmy. But I say Lemmy was a great friend of Troma, and he was the best. And Sean Gunn right there, a wonderful guy, a great guy. And, of course, Sean Gunn and James Gunn and Stevie Blackheart, who's in this movie. Stevie is one of James Gunn's best friends. There's Debbie Rochon, who's been in about 8 Troma movies, Scream Queen, and probably the queen of horror. Stevie Blackheart is to this day James Gunn's best friend, And he met a number of his closest associates and friends on, and we're all in touch. Jane Jensen, Andrew Weiner. Unfortunately, Lemmy died, but he's in Class of Newcomb High. Return to Class of Newcomb High. He's in a bunch of the Troma movies. Terra Firma too. James Gunn, Trey Parker, and Matt Stone do a wonderful public service announcement for hermaphrodites, in you know, trying to support hermaphrodites at the end of Terra Firma. It's wonderful. Very yet amusing.
I got a question, Lloyd, because this is, you know, this is your take on the classic Shakespeare play Romeo and Juliet. Where did the initial idea of wanting to do like a Troma version of Shakespeare play?
Well, unlike the people who brought you Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo and Claire, who clearly hadn't studied Shakespeare, Michael Hers and I went to Yale University and we know Shakespeare. And James Gunn has a master's from Columbia. He knows Shakespeare. So we felt that we would probably create a better version. And indeed, we did. And I don't think Leonardo DiCaprio or Claire, whatever her name is, Danes, they didn't know it. I don't think they ever saw Shakespeare. If they did, they don't understand Shakespeare. Anyway, enough bad mouthing, Lars. Probably the best interpretation of Romeo and Juliet. And in fact, the Museum of Modern Art, this is James's brother, Sean, a wonderful guy. Romeo and Juliet was recently presented in a Shakespeare month called Breaking Bard, where they had a day of Romeo and Juliet. They had Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet. They had Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. And they had Lloyd Kaufman's and James Gunn's Romeo and Juliet. And they had ours at the worst playing time, 4:00 PM. And the place was packed. All these
That's
old
writers
to the Museum of Modern Art, these old people, rich people, they all felt there were that security people told me they had more turnaways than any showing at the Museum of Modern Art. Zeffirelli's version came at 6, half full, and Lars Berman came at the prime time and not even half full. So that tells you something. That tells you that the Troma movies are underviewed. Nobody sees them because we don't have money to advertise. We're an independent studio of 50 years, and the mainstream media are more interested in advertising dollars. They're more interesting in promoting, like New York Times just did, promoting a movie that combines porn with slasher. Wonderful! What a great idea, A24. So they spent 2 pages talking about A24, as if that was never done. The Troma 50 years didn't happen. It ignored. It's like Russia. We don't exist. it's a big problem. It's a big problem. But here we are at the Museum of Modern Art, and we're out selling more tickets than Baz Luhrmann or Zeffirelli. Now, Zeffirelli at least had a quick, if you had a remote control, you could freeze it on Juliet's breast. What was her name? I can't remember her name. But 1968, that was a big deal at Yale.
Meanwhile, we just have boobs on the screen, and we're a big fan of boobs, the three of us.
The point is that this is a movie made in 1992 or 93, and it's still being shown in movie theaters. And I don't know if Zeffirelli's or Baz Luhrmann's movie is still being shown. And again, Jane Jensen and Stevie Blackheart and James Gunn and Val, who plays Murray, they all had studied Shakespeare. They understood Romeo and Juliet. They had background on, you know, they did. It's a wonderful because they understood and had studied Shakespeare.
The movie also looks like it's a time capsule of like the time in New York City, the counterculture at that time.
Well, the inspiration for Romeo and Juliet was what you just said. The problem was that being older at the time, 1992, I noticed that the mainstream was all about being ultra cool. Clinton, about to be president, playing the saxophone on MTV. So that's cool. Right. You know, my generation, the post-war baby boomers, had totally screwed up the notion of love. The American marriage was down 50%. The marriages were breaking up to the tune of 50%. And looks like we got a freeze frame here.
We got a bit of a freeze frame.
But that's an interesting freeze frame, because that guy in the freeze frame won a contest that was run by Spooky World, which was at the time the big, how do you call it, Halloween amusement park. And this guy had won a contest to be in the movie. And we shot it at Spooky World. And the proprietor of Spooky World, who his family owned a big company to make costumes, including Toxie's costumes. He wanted to be in the movie. And also, that's my one scene is there. Yeah. So it's interesting that S Microsoft decided to freeze.
Oh, there we go.
On my
we're back. My Skype just froze. So
very much.
We're back to the movie.
See, one of the great things about our show, Lloyd, you're going to find out very easily. If mishaps happen on this show, they stay in the show because
we just
are,
keep rolling.
Yeah, don't worry.
We keep rolling because we're watching a movie live. So basically, yeah, we just keep all this stuff in.
Here's where James Gunn was so brilliant. Instead of Tromeo, wherefore art thou, he had this drunken father talking to Romeo because he was so out of his mind with drunkenness. You know, how brilliant is that rather than the usual? I mean, James Gunn, job. This is a great film. And in a fair world, it would, well, hey, it's still being played in movie theaters.
Oh, yeah.
We can't keep
there you are.
Who's that handsome man on screen everything back there?
Now, right? We can't keep it in stock. And yes. Look how beautiful this is. This is amazing. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of this movie because it's so different and it's very bizarrely Shakespearean, but it's so crazy. Everything that could happens in this film, and I think Sean Gunn has the best hair I've ever seen in a film.
Well, he's the one who came up with it.
Brilliant.
I can't take any credit for that. Also, Val, the guy playing Murray, is brilliant. When Pat and I, my wife, the commissioner, saw his audition, we said, "Hey, that's a Al Pacino, and he's a terrific actor, great actor."
He's so good in this movie.
Mm. I think everyone's just really good.
Will Keenan is great. Jane Jensen.
More boobs.
Wonderful.
We are very thankful for all the boobies in this movie.
Well, that's thanks to the actors, but. You got to notice the guy who is back to us. Check out his fingers because he was missing a finger. And
I did notice that when I rewatched the film again in prep for this show that I noticed one of his fingers was missing.
I did not see that.
One thing
I like the fluffy phone.
That Trump is very subtle, as you can tell just by this. A few minutes that we've had the pleasure of seeing, and we're all still in touch.
That's so cool.
But she has been back in touch. I don't think he has been in touch.
Oh, we're frozen again on the.
Don't worry, we'll keep the movie going. Don't worry, the movie's still going. So
for the most part, the everybody in Romeo and Juliet, we're all still Jane Jensen, Andrew Weiner, who was line producer, James Gunn, Stevie Blackheart. We're all still in close contact. So
that's really cool.
You know, it's like 35 years. So, you know, I have to say I'm proud of that. You know, I'm more proud of that than were I to get an Oscar. I would definitely not accept it if I were to get one, but I would send Super Marcy up to accept it.
I would certainly accept it.
You make an idealistic speech.
Oh, I'm sure I would.
Yeah, we lost the movie.
We've lost the movie. This is going so well for us with technical issues, but that's fine. Worry.
Not to worry.
Don't worry. I'll see if I can stream it from my end.
Let Beads try sharing it from him.
Now it's Beads' turn.
Yeah, I'll see if I can do it. I can't
make any more of my end puns. and if you see hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm millimeter, but I switched over to digital when it, and I did some other movies, but when it came time for Return to Nukem High and Return to Nukem High, which was suggested by Quentin Tarantino, the more ambitious two-part movie, I used digital because the digital by that time was better. The Alexa movie, the Alexa camera was better than 35 millimeter.
Yeah, it's so strange how everything just updates as the years go by, and then you're using all sorts of different technology and cameras. And I've had to restart recording, so we're good.
We're good.
Okay.
Where's the movie back?
is the movie playing on your end?
What's that?
It's trying to.
Oh, okay.
All right.
We're good.
It's on Troma now.
Just making sure that he's going to see it. So. By the way,
if you want to buy it on Blu-ray and see my commentary track and a lot of extras with James Gunn and the cast, you can get the Blu-ray from TromaDirect.com, which also has all of the Troma fashions, the T-shirts, the various backpacks, Blu-rays, DVDs, backpacks, patches, lots of, among which are the Romeo and Juliet Blu-ray, which is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful, pristine, better than Criterion.
Oh yeah, 100% better than anything Criterion has.
Well, they're good. They're good, but they're not as meticulous at Troma. You know, no, I'm being silly, but Criterion's great. But our Blu-rays are terrific. They're wonderful.
It's just they are.
People should look at them because they have amazing bonus features and full-length documentaries. Poultry Guy's Night of the Chicken Dead's got the best behind-the-scenes documentary you'll ever see. Poultry in Motion, Truth is Stranger than Shithead. Than Chicken. By the way, that guy, the guy who played
Juliet's
father, he was a Shakespearean actor, and he had a kid. He had a kid who was killed. His child was murdered, run over in a parking lot and died, and he used Romeo and Juliet to get over it, to try to distract him. The intensity of Romeo and Juliet, he used it, and he went all the way with it. And honestly, after the movie was over, never spoke to us again. And unfortunately, I don't remember the mother of Juliet. She is in another one of our movies, and she's wonderful, but I can't remember which one. But she's great. She's terrific. And wonderful. Everybody in the movie was fabulous. That was not the actress. The actor person. That was a stunt person.
Is this the first time we see Juliet in the film? Shot.
I think it is.
At this point? Yeah.
I hate to interrupt, but watch closely because you are going to see a hand under the bed hand Juliet or take away the
guitar.
There's a hand reaches up. But anyway, if I missed it here, you rewatch the movie, you'll see the line producer's hand under the bed reaching up to take the guitar. Here it comes. Here
and there it goes. So,
you can see it on the TV version, I guess. Yeah. Anyway.
Just before we continue, I'll just let our audience know we're at 14 minutes and 12 seconds, just in case people want to know where we are.
Debbie Rashan, who's in about 10 of our movies, who is a great actor, who is sincere lover of independent movies like I, and has stayed out of the mainstream because she loves the independent world. And Jane Jensen has become a she's more into music, and Jane Jensen music. Mm-hmm. You can see her music or hear it on at Jane Jensen Music, I think. She's
Are all the tattoos on Debbie Rashan real, or are they just ones that you did for the film?
I did them myself. You could.
Oh.
No, those are tattoo decals. But the tattoo thing, that's a good question, because the inspiration in large part for Romeo and Juliet was that my generation, the post-war baby boomers like Clinton, had emphasized coolness. Emotion is uncool. Clinton playing with the sunglasses, playing the clarinet on MTV. No, the saxophone, you know, oh, so cool. And of course, my generation totally screwed up marriage. Half of them are divorced. So that was one of the points that the generation of Romeo and Juliet were turning inward. They were disenchanted with my generation, and they turned inward. So hence, they were tattooing themselves, and they were indulging in autoerotic asphyxiation and stuff like that. And that's what got me interested, and that's what, in a large part, propelled me to focus on tattoo and kind of the weird underground, at least weird to me, a bourgeois underground of real artists and the sort of art that we deal with, tattoo art and stuff.
The piercings and all that kind of stuff.
Right now, what we're watching now. And because I felt that the post-war generation, the biggest bulge to go through the python, right? The post-war generation still dominates, right? Bernie Sanders, he's 100 years old. Hillary Clinton, hideous witch. What the hell? Who? Biden. We got a guy 100 years old as president. Mm. He's not a bad dude, maybe, but actually he is a bad dude. But at any rate, you know what? It's because the people my age control and they totally fucked it up, as you can tell by all the riots and everything else that's going on. Black Lives Matter. We're still killing black people. We've got more anti-Semitism than ever. We've got a population of idiots because we have. Clinton, was, as Michael Moore said, was the most successful Republican president we ever had. So as a result, we've got horrible things going on, right? We had the end of democracy almost on January 6th. The pyramid is basically there's a small number of extremely rich people who are getting richer and richer, richer at the top of the pyramid. And then the rest of us are eating dog shit.
Pretty much. Well, that's the way of the world, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I think with your films, Lloyd, like not just this film, but other trauma films is like, yeah, I mean, people can go into watching them like for the gore or the violence or the over top hilarity. But you always have something to say within each of your stories.
Mm-hmm. We don't, Michael Herz, my partner of 50 years, and I, we don't take our movies too seriously, but we take we don't take ourselves seriously. But we take these very, very seriously. We take the movies very seriously. And Will Keenan, who was a Lee Strasberg or method actor, he actually masturbated during that scene we just saw.
Oh, wow.
But there you are.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
to the very dial-up internet pornography.
Well, a lot of, say that again. What?
I said he's watching the very old pornography on the computer.
Right. But he wanted to make it real. And good for
it's
him.
It's very real.
So you know, the team that we had, the actors and the crews, and luckily James, who wrote the script, and co-directed, associate directed, rather. Luckily, we had this wonderful family team. And, oops, oh, shit. Hold on. Wait a minute. I may have lost you.
Oh, no, wait.
We can hear you.
We can hear you.
You know, James Gunn was a big Troma fan. Everybody in that movie is a Troma fan, except for the guy whose kid got run over. And he was doing this for some sort of therapy, and he did a great job. So, I think Romeo and Juliet. I don't know of any better Romeo and Juliet, quite frankly.
I do.
Well, this
love.
Is my favorite.
Well, you're not alone. You're not alone. I don't know. I've had more people waiting in line at 4 p.m. for Romeo and Juliet. And hashtag Shakespeare shitstorm. I'm sorry, but that is the best interpretation of Shakespeare's The Tempest. The best one is by a British guy named Derek Jarman. But I swear that hashtag Shakespeare shitstorm is better. And, if you guys want a link, Gideon will send it to you.
Absolutely. Be very keen to have a look.
Email me and we'll send it to you after Gideon blows his trumpet, of course.
Right. Now, with the backstory of what happened between the two houses, I love how the use of the old Troma films as the movie studio.
Well, thank you. Stan Lee, with whom I was friendly since I was at the very prestigious bourgeois Yale University, I became friends with him for over 50 years. And he was a big inspiration and also advisor. He didn't particularly care for the extreme graphic nature of our somewhat adult scenes, but he was a big fan of Troma. Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD, was his favorite, but he gave me a lot of advice on all of the films that I did since the 70s.
Now, on this show, Lloyd, we have a Hall of Fame, and I think the upcoming Penis Monster is officially joining the Hall of Fame with this episode.
I love the Penis Monster.
Well, tell you something, Harry Bowles, that's his name, Harry Bowles, he's become quite a Troma favorite. And if you go on my Instagram, you will see, or on my Twitter, at Lloyd Kaufman. Instagram is at Uncle Lloyd Kaufman, because I've been thrown off two times. You will see that there are quite a number of people with Harry Bowles tattoos. Plus, Harry Bowles has a cameo in Terra Firma. And as if that isn't enough, I believe Harry Bowles is in Return to Newcombe High, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, there's a cameo there. I know he has a cameo in another movie I directed. It's just I'm a little foggy. I'm 77 and took a lot of acid in the 60s. I'm not quite totally cogent. But thank you.
We all feel that.
No way.
Well, I was going to say, Lloyd, what I've really enjoyed the most about Romeo and Juliet, even though, it does pretty much follow the original play quite closely, but I do like how, on occasion, you subvert expectations of what people expect from the play. Like, this whole kind of, what we're seeing right now between Juliet and her father, and I'm using quotes there, is something you would not... is a really interesting and very dark and also kind of very twisted add-on to the story, which I think really adds another layer to it, the whole film.
Sure. It gives you a motivation for Juliet wanting to get out of there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really understood why the Capulets and the whatever they were fighting with each other. But here you can clearly see that Juliet is being raped by her father from childhood. And also James Gunn, the balcony speech that James Gunn created was terrific.
It is. I think that's one of my favorite scenes
really,
in the film, actually.
The time
I think the scenes with Romeo and Juliet, I think, are actually just very they're very charming. And I think the both actors are actually quite captivating in their roles, especially when they have their scenes together, which I really like.
Well, we take a long time to cast, let me tell you. And in the case of Sean Gunn, who you see there, wonderful actor and well-educated. Jane Jensen and Will Keenan had studied Shakespeare They got it. They understood Shakespeare. That's the whole thing. You got to understand. Mm. If you don't, you end up with Leonardo DiCaprio and and hey, you make $200 million, but it ain't you know, it's not that it's not the real Shakespeare. You know what I mean?
This is Shakespeare.
Yeah, I mean seriously, Shakespeare would have loved this stuff. This is you know, we're bringing Shakespeare into the, in this case, 1992, I guess, and James's brother was wonderful.
Well, I do like his hair. Yes, the hair. But I do like, because we're about to see like a big sort of gore set piece coming up. And every time I see this set piece, I just can't help but wince because it looks so real and believable. Where how?
Yeah. This is pure insanity. He's hanging from his head out of the car.
Isn't that great? That because the exact same thing happened to me.
No.
My wife had a nice Mustang, and I leaned in the window and tried to romance her, and she closed it on me. And so this was based on reality, of course.
I love this gag, Lloyd, because you think, oh, there's a kid, his father's teaching his daughter to cross the street. You think, oh, no, the kid's going to get run over, but he gets run over. Instead,
well,
I love
guy
that
was
gag.
One of our, that guy was one of our stunt people. So
nice her guy. Reaction is beauty right there.
But again, for a movie that cost $350,000 total, this is wonderful. Wow. Look at the production. Look how entertaining it is,
yeah.
And how
oh,
much
yeah.
fun it is, and yet, well, the New
oh,
York
there we go.
The New York Times gave it a very good review, but the St. Louis, we opened it in St. Louis at for some reason because James Gunn came from St. Louis, and the stupid idiots who reviewed it panned it. They sure as fuck wouldn't pan James Gunn now, right?
No,
that's the problem. That's the problem with the media. They're totally corrupt. They're totally on the needle of advertising. This is a wonderful film. It's ridiculous. You know, and here it is. We're 40 years later, and people are still booking it in movie theaters, right? Mm-hmm. Look at the pillow there, the guy.
That looks so painful. Like
I'm fascinated, Lloyd, by the guy with the monitor lizard, like that extra with the monitor lizard. I'm fascinated by him.
The two women were, we had au pairs, and the two women were two of our children were toddlers, so we had au pairs, and they wanted to be in the movie.
I love the cow costume, which
well, that was part of the
so great.
Vegetarianism was,
yeah,
you know, part of the deal. And this is 1992, right? We were made fun.
Oh yeah.
I just noticed a truck in front of the this place, Meat World, that was also a truck. I never noticed that.
Oh, this is so just. Blah.
Is this was this a real meat factory, Lloyd, where you shot it?
It was a genuine butcher. We had tremendous trouble. Now, when I was working on Rocky, 1977 or whatever, no trouble. We got a huge in Philadelphia. We got a meat packing place, and that's where Rocky punches the carcasses. Now, 20 years later. These places are all worried about border health and blah blah PETA but one place we found, I don't even remember where it is, but they're in the credits. They were so nice to us, and all the people in the film are their workers, except guy. You know, he's not obviously, but he was terrific and a wonderful actor. I can't remember his name, but he was just the perfect. A would-be concert for Juliet.
Yeah, he's
and basically we built that set. These people were not really a big butcher. They weren't really a packing house. So, but they did have various barbecue stuff. So we hung up the barbecue stuff and And they did have some tripe, which you see in the back. They were perfect. And I hope the film helped them, because they have a big credit at the end. And, you know, they gave us a good opportunity. And, you know, Romeo and Juliet's been, I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands of people who have seen this movie. And James Gunn, of course, shows it. So hopefully it did good things for them.
I have another question, Loy, because I'm kind of fascinated, because, you know, I've done filmmaking in the past, but I'm kind of interested in terms of, like, how do you approach extras in the backgrounds of your films? Because I noticed, like, through what I love, another thing I love about this whole movie is, like, all the extras feel like they could also be characters in another movie.
They're all,
like,
doing their own thing. They're all doing their own thing.
Yeah, they're doing their own thing. And I'm sort of wondering, like, as a filmmaker, like, how do you go to direct the extras in the backgrounds of all these scenes?
Sometimes that's an interesting question, because sometimes the main actors get upset with me because I spend more time putting in shtick, as we say, putting in goofy things in the background. If you see Waitress, by the way, that movie I referenced, every time you look out the windows during the day of the restaurant, there's all sorts of stuff going outside the windows. I probably spent more time directing that. And these folks in the background were all workers at the, I think they were all workers. Yeah, they were all workers. They were all at the meat place, whatever it was.
Them preparing the pig, coming from an Italian background, and the family would always get together on a weekend, grab a pig, and just make whatever food they could with the pig, and seeing, like, the intestines coming out, and it's so many memories of the family making, like, sausages with the pigs. It's so spot on as well with what they're doing. It's just memories for me.
Well, the guy who was playing Juliet Suter, the rich guy, Meat World, he did not want to put his head inside the pig. But James Gunn said to the guy, look, I'll put my head in the pig if you are willing to do it after I do it. And that's what happened. James did. I'm sure I did it, because I enjoy that kind of stuff. And then whatever his name did it. And it's a wonderful scene. He's terrific. And Val, there's some interesting people in the background here, but I don't quite remember who they are. This was a fancy mansion who happened to be she, by the way, who's in another scene, was some kind of big time penthouse or Playboy. You know, star, monthly star or something. Mm. And here comes the finger. Watch.
I've never noticed that. And I've seen this film, like, several times.
Even if you don't notice the finger, you get it. The problem is you focus more on his wiping his mouth and the funny joke about that. But people have seen this movie several times. I get tweets that people say, hey, I just saw the guy with a missing finger.
Well, I think that's what makes trauma films so rewatchable, is you're always catching something you missed the first, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Spot on. Right. Spot on. Absolutely. I kind of want to wear a cow costume, though.
Well, my mother, my sister Susan, who was art director on Mother's Day, and my brother Charles Kaufman, who was the writer-director of Mother's Day, probably our best movie, and Eli Roth's favorite horror film, we all grew up with a mother whom we called Moo. So and she kind of enjoyed that, and she sort of collected cows. The cow thing is sort of, aside from my being a vegetarian, the cow thing kind of works on personal levels. And by the way, I think Jen Jensen was vegetarian. So she had to eat the meat in the scene with her family and the suitor. She might have grown up afterwards. She was so nice to even put it in her mouth. I wouldn't have done that.
But well, I mean, that shows how dedicated she was to being a part of this movie.
Well, don't tell Jane Jensen that. Luckily, nobody's listening to my boring commentary. So, she's beautiful. What a beautiful, talented person. I mean, she's really and courageous. And by the way, Jane Jensen was the first person who came in to audition. And I told James, I told Andrew Weiner that that's our Hitler. And they didn't believe it. And we went through tons. We went through 12 or 13 other auditions in which she appeared. And finally, they picked somebody else for reasons I won't go into. But the somebody else chose to be a total psycho with a psycho boyfriend. And boy, am I happy, James, that James agreed to take Jane Jensen. Cause, I mean, she's wonderful, and she went all the way with it. As did the people in this picture. As did the baby. I mean, we really had a wonderful, devoted cast. And now, with hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, thanks to Romeo and Juliet, you can't believe what the cast and crew went through. We even filmed 8 days in Albania. I mean, hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, you cannot believe. Trained whales. I mean, I don't even, the hardship of making that film, I don't know that even the dedication of this cast would have put up what's on hashtag
Shakespeare. I'm very excited for that.
Well, again, we'll send you the link.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, email me. You have my email.
Mm-hmm. I do like this. The first meeting of the cow and the Juliet.
Hello, Martha the robot here. That concludes part one of the recording with Lloyd. Coming up in only several seconds is part two of the recording, and this time there were no technical issues. Remember to sign up to Troma now and watch Tromeo and Juliet along with all the other excellent content on offer. Now back to our show.
We should have subtitles. Yes. I'll make sure I have a backup recording as well.
so where we left off, we're at the party scene where Romeo finally meets Juliet.
Yes, our two star-crossed lovers are finally meeting. With the cow costume, which might be my favorite thing ever.
Well, one of the themes of this movie was against eating flesh, and that's what the was all about. Also, my name is Kaufman, so makes it double important. promo wordplay. Thank you.
Actually, thank you. Floyd, I like how you did with this scene. Like, you sort of get the meat, and then all of a sudden the background goes black, and then all the sort of like the lights kind of shimmer in the background like they're around stars. That's actually a really cool little
Isn't that it's romantic and very it's basically just shitty Christmas lights and and black cloth, we had a turntable. At some point they revolved, and we rented a turntable for them. But the interesting thing was, they never they deliberately, at least I never discussed this with Jane Jensen, but Will and I talked about it, the dude, and I think their strategy was that they wouldn't get involved with each other romantically until the scenes like that this had passed. Oh, here we go. We used what's called a loony lens. It's a lens that has a crank, and you turn it. This was shot in 35mm. In those days, I thought it looked better than today, than the digital. But the loony lens was what allowed me to get the image revolving around the center of the screen. And that's not so easy to do with, although with the lighting.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah, it looks really, really cool. I like how we've got Kabuki Man and Toxie as costumes in the background.
Well, Stan Lee and I were buddies for 50 years, until he died. He was a big influence on me, and we've created the Troma universe. Not as successful as Marvel, but all the movies, not all of them, but the ones that I've pretty much written and directed, they do intersect with each other. So Kabuki Man is in the Toxic Avenger movies, and they make appearances in hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, both of them. In fact, even No Zone is in hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm. And he's not even a... No Zone's only a cartoon character. He doesn't even exist. And there he is in hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm. How is that possible?
Anything is possible in Tromaville.
Well, now that you say that, Lloyd, like being like you do have the Troma universe, where does this film kind of sit in that universe? Is it its own kind of separate thing outside the universe, or is it sort of in another small part of the Troma universe?
No, so this is perfect. The idea was that my generation, the biggest bulge going through the economy, going through the snake, is the post-war baby boomers. And we totally fucked it up. You know, with all the hippies and the bullshit with Abby Hoffman and all this crap, we screwed it up. Half of us get divorced, so we've messed up love entirely. And this was sort of my answer to it. The younger people at the time, in 1993, the younger people were involved in tattooing themselves. They understood that Clinton and his oh-so-cool behavior didn't really work. So they started sucking on toes. No. The younger people started to get tattoos. They started to turn inward, get tattoos. Autoerotic asphyxiation. That wasn't a big deal with my generation, but it's a much bigger deal with the younger generation. This is all part of the theme of Romeo and Juliet, and the fact that their generation here, Romeo and Juliet, are stuck in the cement of the mainstream old people like me. Now this movie is shot in 1992 or 3. I just watched a French movie called by the woman who made Raw. Julia
DeComo? I think it's Julia DeComo, I believe. Yes, I could be completely wrong. Sorry.
No, you got it right. Anyway, she's great. I was on a jury with her, and she was terrific. She had all the judges. I was president of the jury, and if it was up to us, we would have just said hello to the audience and run away. But she's... on directing, she directed a little scene for with us, and I had my Cannibal the Musical kazoo with me, and I think I had a Stuck on You, some kind of thing, I can't remember, but anyway, we made a nice little sort of almost Troma tribute thanks to her.
That's so cool. But,
this new movie she did, which is called what the hell is it called? Trillion?
I think it's Titan.
Is it Titan?
Yeah, that's it. Yes.
Yeah.
I just watched that. She's got a stomach that swells up and opens up like Class of Nukem High. She's got people vomiting all over the place. She's got a meltdown. But yet her movie won the Cannes Palme d'Or. Mm. And it's a very serious movie. It's not funny. It's not funny in the slightest. It's much more profound than I think our movies. But I have to say I didn't get it. But I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. It's a wonderful film, but I didn't get it. But anyway, you can see she's a Troma fan in the same way that you can see Deadpool has references to Troma all over it and breaking the fourth wall, which we've been doing since 1970, even before Troma began. That's what they do in Deadpool, and they do a lot of other Troma things. Toxie set the stage with the R-rated superhero. Were there any R-rated superhero movies back in
1980? I don't think so. The only one I can think of really is the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah. Now there are lots of R-rated superheroes. Mm. But Troma's been movies of the future for 50 years, and other than you, nobody gives a hoot. But what's interesting, it's... This timeout booth. this was James Gunn's, I think, most brilliant idea. And he had many brilliant ideas. But the balcony speech from Romeo and Juliet, how were we going to do it? And and James came up with this amazing timeout box. And we teed this up early in the film. So here it is. It's the time. And later on, Jane and Will, Romeo and Juliet, fuck in the timeout box. And they, according to Will, they had agreed that they would not have any kind of intimate relations until the script released them of that requirement. And so that way they'd have all this pent up Romeo and Juliet love.
Makes sense. Up
in their lives. And we actually had a real Safecrackers kit to open that door. We actually had a, but of course it didn't fit the, but it was real.
That's amazing. I'm so fascinated by all your stories. It's incredible.
Well, I'm old and took a lot of acid in the 60s. So.
The timeout booth is really disturbing when you first see it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's awful. But what a great.
So is the dad. Ooh.
How wonderful to have the balcony speech where he's. And then to have this guy. this is terrific. His son had the Capulet. His son had been gotten run over in a parking lot and died. And so this he was using our movie as a kind of a bounce back, you know, and kind of a crazy soul stirring experience to try to flush out the horror of his son being crushed by the wheel of an automobile.
That's very sad.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah.
Very sad, but you can see in his performance too.
Yeah, he's definitely working on some shit.
Yeah.
Oh, he's did a wonderful performance. He was both Will Keenan, sorry, not both, Will Keenan, Jane Jensen, and he at the and Val who played Murray and Stevie. They all studied Shakespeare, and Debbie Rochon, they all knew Shakespeare, unlike Leo and Claire Danes. I don't think they understood what Shakespeare was. But this Romeo and Juliet, these people all had studied Shakespeare, and they got it. And
that's why it really works, too.
Yeah, I mean, they really, and they were really, you know, we rehearsed for months. And James Gunn was very much their acting coach, and he was a co-director or something like associate director, whatever it was. He was major player here, and he wrote the script, and he made many decisions.
I was going to say, Lloyd, like I'm sort of fascinated because, like, what is the writing process of a film like Romeo and Juliet? Like, how much is, say, from the original first draft of the script make it into the final film, or were there a lot of changes between that first draft and to the shooting script?
This film was a very difficult one to get to a script that I liked, that I didn't feel humiliated to shoot. And it took us at least five years. And I tried different iterations, and I wasn't able to get to something that I thought was good. And John Avildsen, the Rocky director, with whom I worked on a lot of stuff, and he was sort of a mentor and a very good friend, and taught me a lot about pot technology. He pushed me away from 100%. I was originally going to do this like Romeo and Juliet and just make it Shakespeare's words all the way. He said, that's stupid because my audience, the younger people, they don't even, most of them haven't even seen one Shakespeare play. So he said, why don't you get some high school kids and have them talk it through and rewrite it in high school, American high school jargon. So we tried that. I got Jason Green, with whom I'm still friendly. He's got a band in Las Vegas, pretty well known. And he took a whack at it. And this was when he was like 18 years old or so. He was, I think he was still in high school. And that didn't come out too well. And then, anyway, finally, James Gunn came along and I hired him as my assistant. And then I had seen his resume that he had he had an M.A. From Columbia, not the drug dealing country, but the university. Also in a country in its own right. It's buying up a lot of poor people from the upper Manhattan. They are sort of colonizing upper Manhattan. So they are a country, and there are a lot of drugs at Columbia. So university. At any rate, they had something to do with all this. But look at this shot with Tromeo and Juliet in the time booth.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a very striking shot, like with it being in a very dark room and just the light being on the box. Like, it's a very beautiful shot, Lloyd.
I agree. It's lovely. And, of course, all they had to do was open that door. They could get out.
I mean, was there a way to, like, when the actors are actually, I'm assuming, like, the camera is in the box with them right now, but was there any, like, little areas with they could breathe if they're in the box?
Sometimes it's in the box. But they held their affection for each other until this scene. If I'm, you know, Jane didn't say that, but Will did.
And he's just passed out.
I feel bad for the cook here because she has feelings for Juliet.
Yeah,
it's sad, very true. But, you know, that's the nurse, right? Shakespeare wanted it that way, but he wasn't allowed, you know.
So you and can explore a lot more now. Or in the 90s.
They're dressed up as the women in those days. So how could you have a good scene with Debbie Rochon? Back in Shakespeare's time, it would be some, you know, some older woman, a man dressed up as a woman, which not terribly attractive. But
I guess
it's a beautiful scene. It's sexy, but yet there's pathos where Debbie understands that basically she was she had seduced a lipstick lesbian, that Juliet was not a genuine lesbian. Yes, she enjoyed it, but she dreamed about men and she wanted a man. She just didn't want to eat meat. She didn't like the guy her father had set up.
I don't think any of us liked the man that her father wanted her with.
Yeah, exactly, right? Sure. How many strong fathers have ruined their sons? How many of these Jack Welshes of General Electric, these scumbags, have ruined, destroyed their sons, if they had sons, and totally created a bogus sense of values? Jack Welsh was the chairman of General Electric, whilst it was the largest corporation in the world, and he was a scumbag. He was, in my opinion, a crook. The company went bankrupt after he left. It immediately went bankrupt, and all the widows and orphans that were relying on dividends, the dividends were done away with. But meanwhile, the financial community, Wall Street Journal and NBC, and I'm sure the Canadian, they all had this Jack Welsh on TV and licking his ass, and New York Times, and this is what we were fighting against, this kind of stuff. Chairman of the board of General Electric was an American hero and a and more than American, Canadian and worldwide. Anyway, this was good stuff. This is wonderful. James Gunn, he did it. No, he gets all the credit for this. No, there was no way to do the proper treatment of Romeo and Juliet with without the balcony and her whole thing. And the fact that she says, oh, fi, I think is wonderful.
Well, I do like how the dialogue in this film, like, it definitely incorporates a lot of Shakespeare's dialogue. But you also, like, again, just you're sort of the more heightened, you know, Tromer-esque dialogue. But I do like how you kind of spin the Shakespearean dialogue in its own way to kind of make it more, I guess, relevant within the time of the story takes place.
Well, it's a beautiful story to begin with. And I think Shakespeare actually reimagined, I think he made a sequel to an Italian play of some sort. So, you know, people, these fanboys who complain about Toxic Avenger being remade as a $200 million movie, Shakespeare was a remaking. It's all he did was remake movies, not movies, but these theater pieces. The Tempest, I'm told, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I have read and been told that The Tempest was the only original play, except for Titus, which, as you know, was not terribly successful, that The Tempest was the only one that Shakespeare came up with, except for Titus. Everything else he did was derivative. So why can't we have 10 remakes of Deadpool or Toxic Avenger or Iron Man? You know, if
it means exactly. Yeah,
mean something to you guys, to people who love cinema. Why not? Why not?
I think we want to see different interpretations of things. So why not be excited for a new Toxic Avenger movie?
I'm excited to see the trailer to that because just to see what it's going to be.
Be open-minded. Look, Romeo and Juliet. How many iterations of Romeo and Juliet? And yet, of all the iterations of Romeo and Juliet, the New York Museum of Modern Art chose Romeo and Juliet, Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet, and which was very exploitative. And, although you did see the, if you had a freeze frame machine, you could see the breast of the Juliet, whose name I've forgotten temporarily, and the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet was a joke. And but they chose those three, Baz Luhrmann, Zeffirelli and Lloyd Kaufman and James Gunn. And the biggest audience showed up for Romeo and Juliet in the afternoon. The security people told me that they had to turn away people at 4 p.m. and nobody shows up for movies at 4 p.m. It had a full house and more. And the other two Shakespearean plays had, you know, half a house if they were lucky. So, you know, obviously, Romeo and Juliet is an important, reinterpreting of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And
it is.
It's connected. It's in large part due to great Hollywood's number one director, right? Guardians of the Galaxy, Suicide Squad, and Pacemaker, and... Romeo and Juliet. I mean, come on, come on, as our president said.
I love this movie. Sorry,
B. I was gonna...
These guys are filming in front of somebody's house who we don't know.
I love that.
We put up the cross. We got some sticker crosses because our investor next door. Gave us we filmed inside, we filmed outside, and we had a little time to shoot the religious man, and we just moved to the left of the, see that cross is, we stuck it on
a
sticker.
And it works. I can't unsee that now, Lloyd.
And this could be a church.
The people were enough to let us shoot. They didn't bother us. That's pretty nice. And meanwhile, their house is now an exterior in a movie written by James Gunn, who is the number one director in Hollywood. So their generosity paid off. And Jane Jensen was great. What a great actor she was. And
she's great.
Believe it or not, she was the very first audition that I did for Romeo and Juliet. And James Gunn and Andrew Weiner wanted to use somebody else. And she was good. She was good. But she was better endowed, perhaps. I think that was the idea. But I liked Jane, and I thought Jane was Juliet, perfect. And we went through hundreds of people, hundreds of people. By the way, Joe Fleischaker was in every movie from Troma's War on. He was our 500-pound action hero, and unfortunately he died not too long ago, but we had a memorial service for him, and he was a major part of Troma's history, without a doubt.
I always pop when I see him show up in one of the Troma movies.
Yeah. He's very iconic, that's for sure.
Guy Snyder of the Chicken Dead, many consider Joe Fleischaker's best role, but I think this was pretty good. Also, there's some other Troma factoids or factloids.
Factloids. Was it James Gunn's picture in that magazine of the sex line number? I feel like that looked like James Gunn in the magazine.
Yeah, that was a genuine ad
put his face on.
Yeah, he had taken that on, I believe it's .com. But I'm not sure. .com. I'm not sure, but I think you've just. Thanks to you, James Gunn's going to be fired by Disney once again.
Oh no!
Cut that out. Maybe cut that.
I got to say, Lloyd, one of my favorite things about.
What's that?
I was going to say, one of my favorite things about this film is all the kind of the porno style titles of all the Shakespeare plays that sprinkle throughout the whole film. When you see like ads or videotapes, it's always like, I guess, a porn spin on of a Shakespeare title. And that those always make me laugh every time I watch this film.
They're great. Somebody ought to do them, right? Merchant of Penis. Why not? It's a perfect idea. You know what I don't understand is these porno Vivid and the other ones, they make billions of dollars. Why don't they try to do a real film and make it hardcore, but make it we tried in the 70s, there were attempts, but they the Damon Runyon characters didn't let the young people do it. But today there's huge AVN in Las Vegas makes Khan look like amateur hour, and there's billions of dollars there. Why don't one of those two or three companies that do make the billions of dollars, why don't they give somebody $500,000 to make a movie like Romeo and Juliet, but make it a porno film, but make it good, make it entertaining and erotic. Why won't they do that?
Yeah, I think we need more Romeo and Juliet type movies with lots of hardcore pornography. We need good movies with porn.
David Fincher, you know, the New York Times this weekend, David Fincher, who's a wonderful director, they have a huge story about, David Fincher, he's going to do animation. What happened? What happened? You know, that's, how outrageous that he would step down or step up. I don't know what the point is. I didn't read the article. But why not? Why doesn't somebody like the people, these young directors who have three names? who did that porno movie with the big penis with the guy? Fashion model, Monty Mark. Ooh. Who did?
Oh, I don't know. That could be any movie.
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds. Oh. Paul Thomas Anderson.
The swimming pool sequence from my brother's film. They, in my opinion, they copied the roller skating shot. And I think Eli Roth might back you up on this. Boogie Nights.
Yeah. Boogie Nights. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. That guy should do a hardcore film and make it good. Why not? Why can't you? He almost did it. He came close. Mm. He's a major artist.
I don't like this.
Now, this scene you're watching, the actor, who's terrific, he didn't want to put his head inside the carcass of a pig. Now, I understand he was Jewish, but so what? Do the Jews have something against pigs? It's ridiculous. Anyway, James Gunn agreed that if James Gunn would put his head inside the carcass of a pig, that this actor would put his head inside the carcass of a pig. And James did it. And I am Jewish, so you know I can't come anywhere near pork. But that guy, thanks to James Gunn, he did put his head inside the carcass of a pig. And it's a great scene. And the sound is great. Got this great pork-like echo, a wonderful guy. And
and he really commits to the performance, too.
Oh, everybody in a movie, the people don't make a lot of money. They get about 10% of what they should be getting. So everybody who's involved, they're 100% devoted. Tiffany Shepis is now a scream queen, you may know. Stevie Blackheart, who is he is James Gunn's best friend, or one of James Gunn's very best friend, came out of Romeo and Juliet. James met him on Romeo and Juliet, not on Grindr, as people have suggested. Val was a high school friend of James Gunn, and in my opinion is as good, and my wife, the commissioner's opinion, that Val is as he should have been the next Al Pacino. It didn't happen, but he's still an excellent actor. He's terrific. He gets to act. I just don't think he's motivated. He is Al Pacino.
Well, he's definitely one of my favorite characters in this film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's amazing. He does the monologue, which James Gunn wrote, where he's making fun of that guy. And it's wonderful. It's poetry. It's coming up very shortly.
I actually think everybody is really, really fantastic. I just love it.
Stevie, by the way, did a scene, but it was a poem. I had to cut it out. Oh no, it was a sonnet. Steve did a sonnet. It was beautiful. I think it may be in the Blu-ray of Romeo and Juliet. But I had to cut it out because the movie was too long. But this was urination scenes. And speaking of urination, when James Gunn submitted his first draft of Romeo and Juliet after 5 years that I had failed, he had added 7 urinations, or maybe it was 8 urination scenes. And, you know, I had been making movies for a number of years. And James, I told James, you know, I limit urination scenes in my movies to 5. So no more than 5 urination
5 scenes. 5 per movie.
That's the maximum.
I was going to say, Lloyd, as somebody who I've been watching a lot of trauma movies, and particularly in this past month of this show, I was kind of wondering, like, because what I love about trauma films is how outrageous and over the top and violent a lot of them can be. But has there ever been a moment like maybe you think like maybe this might be a little too much, or we might have to scale it back a little bit? I've always been kind of curious if that's ever happened, whether it's on this film or any others.
What's the tipping point?
That moment, for example, when Val stuck the needle in the eye of the guy whose name I can't remember, but who was a wonderful actor. And if he wanted to do it, I would do Toxie 5. But he's terrific. But I didn't want to do that. The actors came up with that. That was their own thing. I had no interest in sticking the. I think they came up with it, or maybe James Gunn did. But I was very upset by it. It's pretty intense.
Well, I know our very Marcy. But I know you have a thing about eye trauma in this film.
Yeah, I don't like seeing eyeballs.
But look at this scene here. right? This scene is 1990. We shot this in 1992 or 93. Mm-hmm. And we were right on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. It's perfect. It's so today. It's ridiculous. And
yeah,
yet,
that's amazing with watching this now. The film holds up so well today as it did in the 90s. It's great.
I think it's better today.
Mm.
I think it's more agreeable to people today, and the woke people who are 25 years behind the times, I think they're like on this page now.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That looks gruesome. Yeah.
I mean, see, the way these guys played it, all three of them, they played it straight. And then Stevie comes with that line. And it's just perfect. I mean, really, in film history, you won't find too many lines that are set up better than Stevie Blackheart's was.
I love now, this fight coming up scene. Now.
Here's some behind the scenes that I'm going to give you right now. Ooh. You're going to see Stevie Blackheart get kicked in the head by Tiffany Shepis. Well, here it comes. Oh!
Oh.
Well, what happened is Stevie had to go to the hospital. He turned blue. He turned gray or blue or green, some color. And we had to send, and CNN was on the set. That's the only time any network had any interest in coming to a trauma set. But what happened was when we rehearsed with Tiffany, who was a martial artist and was a brown belt or a black belt, she was some kind of belt, but she wasn't wearing the high heels, the stilettos. So, you have to get a sooner or later joke. But when Tiffany kicked, she had the stiletto, which was 2 inches bigger than when we had rehearsed. So the heel went into Stevie's nose, and he passed out. And luckily, he was okay. And the ambulance came, but he was fine by the time it came. So you never know, right? You know, 2 inches. We should have rehearsed with the stilettos. My mistake. And this, of course, is one of the greatest.
He lost his head.
Yeah, and James Gunn. There is James Gunn, by the way.
There he is.
Hey.
One of those scenes where James Gunn and I were walking through the location, and we just started hacking around, and we just went from thing to thing. The car was not in the original scene, but we just kept having fun with it, and we just kept. And then we think, well, why don't we put in the Kabuki Man card? and this began. Actually, we had not used the Kabuki Man car flip until Citizen Toxie. We never used. This was the first time we used the Kabuki Man car flip since Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD. And James suggested we do it. And then it was such a big success. Look at James's hairdo. And his wife is like 30 years older than James's. And my knee hurts. Oh, my knee.
I love that gag. That gag, what makes the punchline of the whole scene work is right. Him just like, everyone's like,
he's the oboe player, and he hurt his knee. James was terrific, and we did the Kabuki Man car flip, and it was such a big hit that every film since then, since Romeo and Juliet, you're going to see the Kabuki Man car flip. And Return to Nukem High, there's a surprise for you, because there's another classic vehicle flip in Return to Nukem High, which was the second volume of the Return to Nukem High 2 film movie, which was Quentin Tarantino's suggestion.
Ooh. I hope the Kabuki Man car flip is in the big budget Toxie movie. I would laugh so hard.
You know, I signed an NDA, so I can't talk.
Okay. No worries. Oh, okay.
All I can tell you is that the script to the new Toxic Avenger movie is better. And Macon Blair, he loves Troma. He knows Troma better than I do. I mean, he knows he's seen Terra Firma. He's definitely seen Romeo and Juliet. So you won't be disappointed, James.
Nice.
James Gunn and you are going to be very happy with Macon Blair's Toxic Avenger. No joke.
Nice. We're all very excited.
I think he will be the James Gunn of the future. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, that's all right. I was going to say we're just all very excited to see this new version and see how it turns out.
I can only say that from what little I know, say much, but it's definitely going to be better than the original Toxic Avenger, which
hey, the original is a classic.
Michael Hurst. We just did that on the show, so
yeah.
What?
Well, we just did that the original Toxic on the show. So,
good. How was the acting?
It was great,
tremendous.
It was brilliant. I love it.
Oh, good, because I've been telling them to do a better job, and I've heard that in subsequent screenings of the original Toxic Avenger, the acting gets better and better. That's great. That's great. I'm so happy.
It really does. It's such a great film, and we watched Sergeant Kabuki Man as well for the show, and we also just watched Class of Newcomb High. So we've had a lot of fun trauma for our show this month. It's wonderful to cap it off with you, Lloyd, to watch such a great movie. It's what a pleasure it's been to be doing this. I'm just so happy.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And
very lovely.
Your dialogue there was one of the few times I've interrupted because it was so made me feel so. Thank you.
Troma's just great. Can't thank you enough for just being you for so long and giving us all these amazing movies.
Well, thank you for paying attention. Thank you for loving Troma movies. And honestly, in my heart and soul and brain, I think the Troma movies that Michael Herz and I made together, I think they're great. I mean, they really are good. And we didn't spend a lot of money. And yes, Lemmy slurs, but gave him subtitles later on in the subsequent movies. And yes, you can see behind the curtain with our movies. But that's what makes them fun. Anyone who loves Bertolt Brecht is going to love any of the Troma movies. And that's what makes them fun. Darren Aronofsky, his movies are wonderful. They're slick. They're great. They're crazy. But he loves Troma because you can see behind the curtain. You can see the appliances that are coming off the people's faces. You can see, that's part of breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah. But it's so pure. That's why I really like it. I mean, it's funny saying Troma's pure, but it is. It's just.
By the way, speaking of pure. Here's a pure scene that the crew and the cast, there were many people who told us to cut this out. But it's true. It's true. And we just it's just been noted that the Southern Baptist Church, the biggest Episcopalian church in the United States of America, has got a huge number of harassment and not harassment, but
assault,
pedophiles,
yeah. Assault, yeah,
yeah. Pedophilia, sexual assault, pedophiles. Yeah.
So why shouldn't we put it up? Why shouldn't we suggest that the priest in Romeo and Juliet was a pedophile? He probably was.
That's the sad thing. It probably was. You can't hide what's reality these days.
Well, when we were making the movie, James Gunn and the crew and the actors, And I, you know, we were all like, well, should we put this in? Should we put this in? And luckily, I had been fucked up the ass by my rabbi. So, you know, I said, okay, put it in. What the hell?
And also, like, you got to, you know what to kind of censor yourself as well as a filmmaker.
Mm.
Well, if I could make a lot of money, I'd censor myself.
Never censor yourself.
Unless you're making a lot of money.
Right, you're right.
Exactly.
I agree with
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Oh, I say be true to yourself. Be true to who you are.
Yes, to thine own self be true. A coined phrase by one, William Shakespeare, who wrote that amazing best-selling book, 101 Money-Making Screenplay Ideas. Hamlet. Now, what do you guys think of all this? What do you think of kind of what I've been saying?
Yeah, I think it's been just really enlightening, Lloyd, just hearing like your thought process when it came to making this film and also the many stories about the behind the scenes of this film and also your career has just been both really interesting and fascinating to me. Because I think I stated before, I have dabbled in filmmaking and I love learning about filmmaking from other filmmakers, like their whole process and learning a lot how you approach this film, you and James Gunn, has been really just fantastic because I'm learning so much while listening to you commentate this movie with us.
Well, I'm enjoying it and thank you very much for enjoying Trauma. Now, this particular scene, we had a problem. We were filming in an old homosexual man had a brownstone in Brooklyn in one of those yuppified places in Brooklyn. He had a private house, and that wallpaper was part of his house. And for some reason, he didn't like what we were shooting. I don't know what was wrong with it, but he didn't like it. Luckily, Val, who played Maury, was on the premises, and the old man was in love with Val. So yeah. James Gunn was able to have Val flirt with the old man so we could get a lot of this scene shot. But eventually, the old man kicked us out, and we didn't finish the scene. But thanks to James Gunn and Val, who played Maury, whom the old man wanted to fuck, we got this wallpaper. The old man was nice enough. He did kick us out, but he was nice enough to give us some of that wallpaper. That's Val, by the way, right there with the thing. Just in case he plays Maury. But we brought this wallpaper back to the Troma building, and we rebuilt the bedroom. So this thing you're seeing, it gets intercut with the set we built in the Troma building because the old man was nice enough to give us the wallpaper, and Val refused to fuck the old man. We were able to titillate the old man as far as we could, but eventually he called us, and Val... I offered Val some money to fuck the old man, but he said no.
Well, now that you say that, Lloyd, like at least in terms of this is
$100,000. I was happy to fuck the old man, but but he didn't want me.
No. Well, I was going to say, Lloyd,
the song these folks are singing, "Yes, we'll gather at the river," that's a song that is used many a time in John Ford films. And John Ford, one of the gods of American auteur filmmaking, as far as I am concerned. So this was a big tribute to John Ford. And we have used certain hymns from movies by John Ford and other American auteur filmmakers in our films. For example, Amazing Grace, which was actually a slave trader captain's song, but it was appropriated by the right side. And we used Amazing Grace in Romeo and Juliet. And he comes back, I believe, in Toxic Avenger Part 3. No, sorry, it was first used in Toxic Avenger Part 3, The Last Temptation of Toxie, and then repurposed in Romeo and Juliet. And, you know, how many rich children, rich children have been disemboweled or had their penises cut off by their fathers? How many celebrity fathers have totally made their kids into eunuchs? And that's what this was all about. Here's this kid whose father is a billionaire, and he's a good kid, and he doesn't even want to eat meat, and he's trying to do what his father wants, but it ain't working out. And that's important. How many? If there are thousands, millions of kids who want to help, you know, they want to make their father's dreams come true, or they're not making their father's dreams come true, and you know, how much guilt, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the thing, like I stated sort of earlier in our episode, Lloyd, is like, yeah, I mean, people kind of associate your films and Troma being like over the top and violent and gory, but you always have something to say at the heart of each of your films.
Yeah,
like, there's a message. There's always a message, whether it's political, social, and you know, it always shines through in the end.
Well, that's a great. It takes a little bit of time for the mainstream. You know, it took 35 years to remake Toxic Avenger.
I do like her, how she's sort of like a half cow.
Well, again, it was we set it up early in the movie, right? This is a cow. She's made up.
Oh. Makes me laugh every time.
That was made from a form, a mold from my penis.
Oh.
But how many movies have copied the Meltdown from Troma? In fact, I tell you I just saw a masterpiece that won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. We talked about it. The woman who did Raw. But she's got the Meltdown, she's got the inflated stomach and open stomach, she's got the vomiting. Clearly she's a Troma fan, but she made it into a masterpiece.
And Troma did it first.
Well, exactly. I don't know if he did it first. I think Woody Allen probably did the projectile vomiting first.
Well, that is true, yeah.
Or maybe
Troma perfected it all.
Yeah, you're right. We perfected. That's right.
I do love kind of how we go into this third act and it's just we find out everything and it's all very I don't know what the right word is for it. I can't look away. It's just so good.
It's like Cronenberg's Crash when you're on the highway and you see a horrible crash, you can't help but stop and look at it.
He crushed his head.
It's not a Troma movie without a good head crush.
Yes.
Well, what's interesting is we were the first to incorporate a serious head for any kind of head crush. And I noticed Jane Campion used it in Power of the Dogs. Spielberg is using it in the last three movies he did. I mean, the head crush that Troma pioneered is becoming almost conventional. You know, that Disney animated. What was the recent Disney movie animated? It's quite good, actually.
I can't think. Yeah.
What is it? Boss Baby? Boss Baby. Three. There's head crushing in that movie. There's one head, baby head crushing, infant. They call it infant head. Disney calls it infant skull destruction. They've got a hashtag for it. It's a Disney. So, you know, Troma's a pioneer. What are you going to do?
Troma does pioneer. It is. It really do. I do love this with the sparkles, by the way. It's so good.
And this is all 35 millimeter, the cheapest possible optical effects we could get. But I honestly, I think they're beautiful. And we changed this blue. You see the blue there? Mm. We did change the color. And I think it's terrific. That dark blue, or whatever you want to call it, it's perfect for that scene. And you know, it was kind of a more of a, not a green blue, but we changed. And here
it's
you
very
go.
Striking, yeah.
Yeah, the striking him. Right, all the things for high tech, right? The hair curler.
The hair curler, yeah.
and of course, everybody has a what do you call these things?
Hairpins?
Hairpins,
yeah.
Hitchcock would use benign things to kill people. We'd use like the bobby pins or the curler, but and the nail file, but we would use the more violent things. Well, the nail file can be violent. Violent. Is that? And then of course the old. Who would have? Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's benign. That's a Hitchcock. You know, like Bodega Bay, the birds, the movie, the birds. Birds are totally harmless for Rodin or Michael Moriarty's Cue the Rodin, Cue the Octagon. But look here, when was the last time Tampax killed anybody?
It's so good. They were Troma tampons.
Yeah, Shakespeare book killed anybody. When was the last time a computer
mod on?
But this was a throwback to Charles Kaufman's Mother's Day, in which a television.
Yes.
1980, when my brother made Mother's Day, there were no computers. It was only crappy TV that we wanted to get rid of. And my brother made that statement. But now we saw the evil of these. You see, it wasn't plugged in. You see how we showed, we set up, but it wasn't plugged in. And the audience is saying, well, come on, folks. The thing isn't even plugged in. Why do they put this on the guy's head? Look how stupid Troma is. They didn't plug it in. But you just wait and see.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, we didn't plug it in. Oh, yeah? Well.
I do like how we come back to the box as well.
Yeah, it goes back to the box, which has been set up beautifully. And you can open this door so easily. Really could easily get out. So
it's
he's
such a good visual too. It's really, I love it. It's so good.
It's unbelievable. Look, and how well this guy did it, and how great were Romeo and Juliet, Jane Jensen and.
It's just so good. I love it.
It's not like he gets in, of course. Very logical. He gets in, of course.
I like how we get the payoff for everything. It's so good.
I do have to wonder, Lloyd.
He get in? What was he thinking? The plug is outside. They got the. That is the. It's great.
I was going to say, Lloyd. There we go.
Perfect payoff.
And what's interesting, even more interesting, is that the people, so beautiful, we hired the people to do the explosion, and they made an explosion about 10 times stronger than it was supposed to be, and the whole plexiglass case blew open and the fluorescent lights collapsed. And we had a genuine, the whole place was we were able to put the thing back together. But the fluorescent lights that lit the studio were it was not a good thing. But it worked out okay. We were able to make it work. And happy ending right here.
I got to say, Lloyd. Sorry, go ahead, Batch.
Oh, the cops eating donuts make me laugh every time, too. Anytime you see a cop, he's just shoving donuts right into their face.
I was going to say, like, the exact same thing, because I noticed it a lot now. Like, watching a lot of trauma films recently, Lloyd, I've been picking up a lot of trademarks. But one of them being that every time we see cops in any of your films, they're always eating something at the crime scene. Or people get thrown out of windows.
Well, that is what they do. And that doesn't mean they're bad cops. They just eat a lot. Well, it's boring. You know, 99% of being a cop is just hanging out and watching. So you can't blame them. But on the other hand, they also kill a lot of black people.
So that's not a good thing.
No. So there is some reason to make fun of cops. But if you look at Hitchcock's movies, look at Hitchcock. Look at Psycho. Even in Psycho, the cops are made into kind of goofy characters. But by the way,
now we're coming up. Yeah, the twist of the film.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
No, that's okay.
That's all right. I was going to say, like, we're coming to the twist of the film, and I do have to ask though, because up to this point, like, pretty much, like, Romeo and Juliet pretty much follows like the blueprint of the original Romeo and Juliet play in terms of its structure. Yes. Where did like changing the ending come from? Because we all know that Romeo and Juliet in the original play die.
Spoilers.
I have read that there are scholars who suggest that Romeo and Juliet were somehow related, and that's what it was all about. I'm almost finished. Thank you very much, Super. And I'm there for you. And it's been wonderful hearing my own voice for an hour.
Thank you very much, Lloyd.
It's been the best. Thank you so much, Lloyd.
Thank you so much for joining us.
So, yeah, thank you to Lloyd Kaufman, who joined us for most of Romeo and Juliet.
Wait, is Lloyd here? I thought Lloyd was here. Did I miss him?
Yes, we purposely didn't tell you, Craven.
Oh, come on. I love these movies. Man, there's titties all over the place.
Did somebody say that
Lloyd Kaufman was here? Hello, everyone. It's Louise Lasser. That hunky boy, Lloyd Kaufman, is such a great filmmaker. I'm a huge fan of his films. And I know my son Todd's a huge fan, but that's, and also particularly Terry, but for different reasons. But anyways, I'm very excited that Lloyd Kaufman was on your show, even though I did miss him, so I'm very upset by that.
You know, we didn't tell any of you people, so we could just, you know, have a nice, beautiful podcast with the Lloyd Kaufman.
It's not a Doobie Tuesday without Graham and Louise. You know that.
As much as I hate Louise, I respect Louise.
Well, I guess even though Lloyd's not here with us for the last few minutes of this film, but we are coming to the twist of the film, which Lloyd just mentioned briefly before, is that we discover that Romeo and Juliet are actually brother and sister, or at least half brother and sister.
What?
Spoiler alert.
Oh my god.
I actually think this twist is genius. Sorry,
I was gonna say, what's worse, ending in death or incest? I don't know.
Yeah, so that is the question.
But I mean, does it really matter if you didn't know the person as a brother or sister for most of your life or all of your life?
I mean, don't condone any of this. This is wrong.
I'm just condoning it for Romeo and Juliet because they clearly are in love.
Yes.
Well, that is true.
Even if they are related. I mean, geez, that's how they kept royal bloodlines intact.
Well, that is true. That is very true.
I mean, then it was sort of a bit like, this isn't really the best thing ever. But, yeah, who am I to judge? I don't really care.
Yeah. And a good old-fashioned trauma style, they're like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just get together anyway.
This is such a wonderful movie. And, oh, my gosh, guys, we actually watched this film with the Lloyd Kaufman. Like,
yeah, how, buddy.
How yeah, boy. Just amazing. No doubt this is the biggest episode of the Tubi Tuesdays podcast.
Well, we started this show a little, it's been like about two, almost,
oh, it would have been years now. Like about 2.5 years out. It'll be almost 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never thought we would get Lloyd Kaufman on the show.
Neither did I, to be fair.
To be fair.
To be fair. But wow, like what an absolute honor. And just what a lovely, beautiful person that Lloyd is. He doesn't hold back with his thoughts and opinions, and we love that. And if anybody has takes offense to anything, that's your business, and just keep it to yourself, pretty much.
And what show have you been listening to for the last 2 years?
Yeah, and have you ever seen a trauma movie? Do you know anything about Lloyd Kaufman? The man is a legend. He can say what he likes. Exactly. Truly, he's just a very wonderful and lovely individual.
Indeed.
We also, are almost 2 years into this podcast, by the way. Our first episode dropped July 28, 2020. Coming on 2 years because we're 2022.
Wow.
I love the mutant children.
Yeah, I was gonna say like I love this whole ending because it's so bright and happy, and then you see the children. It's like, oh yeah. They're mutant inbred children.
I don't think it's necessarily from the inbreeding. I think it's from
the craziness
of Tromaville. Like, I think some of that toxic waste from Class of Newcomb High and Toxic Avenger just made it into the drinking water.
Well, that is very true. And also, as you notice there, the baby isn't mutated at all. It's just
that we know of.
Yes.
That we know of, yes.
But look, they're accepted for their differences. And Troma teaches you this. Do not condemn the outsider.
Exactly. And then we have Shakespeare himself.
This was, I love Romeo and Juliet. What a fantastic film. And just wonderful that Lloyd actually chose this film to watch with us. And lovingly dedicated to the memory of Stanley L. Kaufman. There would be no Tromaville without it. 1912 to 1993, as it says on the end of the film. So. Wonderful, like truly. What an honor that was. Go, Uncle Lloyd.
Go, Uncle Lloyd.
And yeah, we'll stop it there. That was Romeo and Juliet through most of it with Lloyd Kaufman. And wow, guys.
And that concludes that concludes Trauma Month.
Yeah, yes. we started off Trauma Month with like the classic, like Toxic Avenger, you know, the most well-known one, and we ended it with a bang with Lloyd Kaufman himself joining us for a film he chose himself for this show.
Yeah, incredible. Thank you so much to Lloyd and I believe it's his assistant that helped get all this together for us. And yes, as you would have heard, it is a little bit different than our normal episodes because we have had to record this at separate times just to make sure we get everything. So hopefully the film, if you watch the film along with listening to us, it holds up a little bit, but shouldn't take too much tweaking to find all the right spots. But amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lloyd, for everything. And please be sure to check out Troma now. It is Troma's fantastic streaming service. You get your first month for free when you sign up. And in Australia, it is only like $6.99 a month. That is extremely cheap for a streaming service with thousands of titles you can watch. You can watch Romeo and Juliet with just Lloyd's commentary on there. You can watch it with James Gunn's commentary. They have all the extra features. You've got the Toxic Avenger, animated series. There's so much. There's documentaries, all sorts of things. Troma Now is absolutely worth it. So please check it out and get all your Troma merch from the Troma shop. We are going to promote the fuck out of Troma because we love it. So yes, show them all the love in the world. And as usual,
We can be found at supermarcy.com, and you can find all the links for the To Be Tuesdays podcast at our link tree, which is linktr.ee/the To Be Tuesdays podcast. So check that out. The Super Network is on all your major social media platforms. And yeah, just look up the To Be Tuesdays podcast in your podcast streaming player to find us there. So be sure to subscribe, leave a comment, all that good stuff. And if you want to say hi to me personally, I'm at twitter.com/supermarcy, and I'm on Letterboxd at super_Marcy, so you can find me at those locations. Batch, where can people find you?
Find me every Tuesday on Web Tales, the Spider-Man podcast, where me and Mark Chevalier recap the classic issues of The Amazing Spider-Man from the beginning to present day. You can also find me on Fridays on Avenging Tales, where me and James Simpson recap all the classic issues of The Mighty Avengers on the Pop4D Network.
Excellent. Make sure to check out Pop4D on Facebook. Bede, where can people check you out?
Well, people want to find me personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJamine, or my Letterboxd account at letterboxd.com/BedeJamine. And of course, all my writings over at supermarcy.com with all my reviews and columns.
Excellent. So with that said, thank you to everyone for joining in. If this was your first time listening to the To Be Tuesdays podcast, I hope you had an absolute blast, because we did. And our returning listeners, thank you so much for the support. And we'll see you next Tuesday, everybody. Bye-bye.
See you next Tuesday, everyone. Bye.
Parting is such sweet sorrow.
Totally sucks.
The To Be Tuesdays podcast is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. The other added bonus of having a fantastic VPN with Surfshark is if a movie we're watching on the To Be Tuesdays podcast is not available in your country, you can switch on that VPN, go to the country that it is in, and watch the movie. Surfshark VPN also allows you to do this on other streaming platforms, where if you're missing some content in that library, you can turn this on and have a look at what else is on offer. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark do 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 do. Surfy shark do 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 do. Now back to the To Be Tuesdays podcast.